Chapter 1. An Amazing Childhood. The freezing rain slashed down in dark diagonal lines across the gray bridge. Below, the swollen black river was pricked with the endless fall of raindrops. A few huddled passersby hurried over the bridge. On the bank, the little town of Seltz seemed shapeless, its streets a dirty swamp of mud blending into patches of cobblestone. A young woman crossed the bridge with a black, wet shawl clinging to her head. She was bent over a pillow. On the pillow, wrapped tightly beneath a white blanket whose edges were stained by the rain, lay a sleeping child, her black eyelids stark against her pale skin. A peasant came up behind the woman, wheeling a load of potatoes, which were emanating a faint, earthy odor. The uneven barrow wheel slipped across a groove in the bridge floor. Cursing, the peasant jumped forward to keep his potatoes from spilling. His thick forearm barreled into the woman's back. She was shoved against the railing, and with tragic dismay, she watched the pillow that held her baby daughter plunge into the swollen Romanova River. "My child!" she cried out. The few people on the bridge and at the riverbank gazed up at her, then looked down quickly at the small pillow on which the child lay, carried along by the rushing current. Men yelled to each other and ran along the river's edge, but no one dared jump into the water. Jews ran alongside the river, keeping the small pillow in sight until, half a mile from the bridge, the river turned the bend. A bramble of stalks and reeds pushed into the water at the turn, and the pillow was caught by the reeds. The men jumped into the murky water that pulled at their legs with numbing cold and snatched the pillow from the reeds. The baby girl was wailing, her small face red and miserable. In a nearby house, she was wrapped in a dry blanket and placed alongside the brick oven that was used to heat the room. But in the rush to save the girl's life, she was placed too close to the coals, and her feet were badly burned. The woman of the house snatched her away from the oven, and thus the infant was saved. Years later, Reb Chaim of Volozhin stood on the same bridge and gazed down at the water where the baby on the pillow had fallen into the river. He recited the blessing, "Blessed are you, Hashem, for having made a miracle for me in this place." Later, in the unvarnished Beis Medrash, he explained to his students, "Her life was saved by a miracle that gave me her son and my great teacher, the Goyin, and so this was my miracle as well." Hagoyin HaChosid, page 8. The name of the girl was Trina. When she became a young woman, she married Rabbi Shlomo Zalman of Vilna. Her son, the Goyin of Vilna, illuminated the entire world with his Torah. History would know him as the Vilna Goyin, or just the Goyin. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was a pious Torah scholar who came from a family noted for its piety and knowledge. His great-grandfather had been Rabbi Moshe Kramer, storekeeper in Yiddish. When Rabbi Kramer had joined the rabbinate, he had not wanted to make a living from the Torah, and so his wife had opened a store. One day, Rabbi Moshe noticed that the house was filled with food, clothing was plentiful, and there was always enough wood for the fire. "Are you taking money from the community?" he asked his wife. "No," she said, "but because you are the rabbi, people are flocking to my store." "But what of the other shopkeepers?" His wife did not reply. "Here is what I want you to do," Rabbi Moshe said. "Make a budget of what you need for the week. As soon as you earn that amount, even if it is still Sunday, I want you to close the shop." Rabbi Moshe Kramer was a strong public leader as well as a scholar, and his family recorded traditions of how he saved the community from blood libels and other threats. Hagoyin HaChosid, page 9 and note 9. In 5441, 1681, Rabbi Moshe died. As a mark of honor, a space of 3 amos was left about his grave. His son, Eliyahu, was also a Dayan of Vilna, and he became famous as Rabbi Eliyahu Chosid, the pious. Rabbi Eliyahu Chosid married the young granddaughter of Rabbi Moshe Rivkis, author of the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch entitled Be'er HaGoyla. Like Rabbi Eliyahu, Rabbi Moshe Rivkis was also referred to in Vilna as Chosid, the only two such men to be given this title in the 17th century. Rabbi Eliyahu Chosid had 3 sons, Rabbi Tzvi, Rabbi Moshe, and Rabbi Yisachar Ber. Rabbi Yisachar Ber fathered Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. He grew to be an outstanding Talmud Chacham who was supported by the community fund that his grandfather, Rabbi Moshe Rivkis, had established. On the first day of Pesach, 5480, 1720, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's wife Trena gave birth to their first child, whom they named Eliyahu after the boy's great-grandfather. This boy, too, would become known as Eliyahu Chassid, the only person to be given this title in Vilna in all of the 18th century, for his sanctity and piety were beyond all measure. And he would also be known simply as the Gaon, the genius, for his scholarship, diligence, and methodology placed him on a level of brilliance that can scarcely be conceived. In an age that produced people of the greatest and most intense dedication to the service of Hashem, the Gaon was in a category of his own. Today, he is referred to by the acronym of his name, the Gra, the Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu. His life provided the most perfect example of his dedication to the ideal of Torah study, and this was utilized as a model by his most important student, Reb Chaim of Voloshin, when he founded the Yeshiva of Voloshin, which has functioned as a model of the yeshiva world and the yeshiva ethos. From his earliest age, the Gaon seems to have been a mature and outstanding genius with an extraordinary memory. By the age of 3, he knew the Chumash and Siddur by heart. On Sukkot, he was brought to the synagogue with the other toddlers to begin his formal introduction to learning. "Children," asked one of the rabbis, "where in the Chumash do we find the name of Avraham doubled? Avraham, Avraham." "In the story of the sacrifice of Yitzchak," one of the children said. "And where else?" the rabbi asked. Eliyahu replied immediately, "In Toldos, these are the generations of Yitzchak, son of Avraham, Avraham." Bereshis 25:19. Another rabbi asked, "Where in the Chumash can we find a verse of 8 words, each ending with the letter Mem?" Immediately Eliyahu replied, "In Vayishlach." Bereshis 32:15. There was a hum of pleasant excitement among the adults. The rabbi lifted Eliyahu in his arms. "And where can we find a verse that contains 5 words each composed of 2 letters?" "There are 3 such verses," said Eliyahu. "One in Bereshis, Bereshis 5:32, one in Vayishlach, Bereshis 35:17, and one in Bishalach, Shemois 17:16. "Excellent," the rabbis were smiling. "3 letters are pronounced the same," the rabbi continued, "the Samach, the Sin, and the Suf. Bring examples of each." "There is one verse that contains all 3, Eliyahu said without hesitating. "Uksilim mosai taskilu, fools, when will you grow wise?" Tehillim 94:8. It is said that when the Gaon was 4 years old, the author of the Shagas Aryeh picked him up and praised his knowledge of Kabbalah. And it is also told that in the winter of 5485, 1725, when the Gaon was 4.5 years old, he and his classmates in the Cheder were reviewing the Parsha of Yisrei. One of the other students said, "On the verse, and Moshe went out to his father-in-law, Rashi adds that Aaron also went out. How did Rashi know that?" Eliyahu replied, "The verse says that Moshe went out, not that he went. Our sages teach that when a tzaddik goes out of a place, its glory leaves it. So the glory left the place. Now if Moshe alone left, Aaron was still there. And since he was a tzaddik like Moshe, the glory should have remained. Therefore, it must be that both Moshe and Aaron left, and only then did the glory leave the place." While other children played soldiers or threw tops with nuts as prizes, Eliyahu learned. He refrained from playing a wrestling game where 2 boys sat piggyback on other boys and tried to pull each other down, because, he said, "I cannot pull down a friend of mine." Ruach Eliyahu, page 82. The Jewish quarter of Vilna, where the Gaon grew up, was cramped. Here lived over 3,000 Jews, most of them artisans, particularly tailors, furriers, and jewelers. There were also workers in 40 other professions, such as goldsmiths, weavers, glaziers, dyers, barrel makers, tobacco dealers, grain merchants, wagon drivers, and musicians. Jews were legally confined to a small ghetto consisting of 3 streets: Yatkova, Slaughterers Street, St. Michael's Street, and Zhidovska, Jews Street. But in actuality, they had long spread beyond the ghetto limits. The houses opened onto courtyards, and these opened on each side to a different street, and so these courtyards were in effect small side streets. Here, merchants sat by every doorway, window, and niche, selling old clothes, cheese, bread, pots, meat, and shoes. A mile away was a lush green countryside. Farmland blended into the thick shadows of forests, where birds chirped, and at night, wolves and bears roamed. In the Jewish quarter of Vilna, two-story and three-story houses leaned against each other, and arches spanned the narrow cobblestone streets, lime crumbling from cornices. Here, Jews lived in various degrees of comfort. Most of the apartments were small, with tile floors, metal shutters on the windows, and metal doors. Some Jews lived well, and some in horrendous conditions, in particular, those who lived in windowless cellars with floors of packed earth, where rats and mice leapt about at night. There were even some sub-cellars, two stories below the ground, illuminated by tallow candles whose odor seeped through one's hair and clothing. In 5484, 1724, when the Goyen was 4 years old, the Jewish quarter caught fire. In the light of the hellish flames that belched forth suffocating smoke, firemen drew out buckets of water from the synagogue courtyard, the only source of water for the Jewish quarter, and brought in water from the Vilya River, half a mile away. Not only did the wooden houses burn fiercely, but the brick houses were also scorched and gutted. But the Goyen's progress in Torah was not disrupted. The Goyen continued learning in Cheder until he was 6 years old, and then his father began to tutor him. When the Goyen was 6 and a half, his father taught him a complex analysis of a piece of Gemara in the casuistic style known as Chiluk. One day, in the Beis Medrash to the left of the great synagogue, the Goyen stood before a group of scholars. A row of pillars divided the room in two, and behind the Goyen was the Aron Kodesh, its copper doors embellished with simple designs. From the L-shaped courtyard came the voices of other boys his age playing the button game and hurl the stick. The little boy stood before his elders and with great clarity presented the complex chiluk that his father had taught him. When he finished, there was a murmur of appreciation. On Shabbos afternoon, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman came with his son to the home of Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel, Rabbi of Vilna. Scholars in black silk kaftans were discussing Torah. At the head of the table, Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel smiled at Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. "Please wash and join us for Shalosh Sudos." After Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and the Goyim broke bread, Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel turned to them. "Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, you have a brilliant son. His ability in giving over the chiluk this week was masterful." A tall man with a sparse beard and coal-black eyes praised Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. "You have taught your son well, but his performance this week was no wonder. The boy merely memorized what you taught him." "That is not so," said Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel. "I am sure the boy understands what he learns and that he could come up with his own insights." He turned to the Goyen, wedged among the adults at the table. "Eliyahu, what if we gave you an hour to prepare a sugya that we choose? Would you agree to come out and share your insights?" Eliyahu nodded. Eliyahu went to the adjoining room and sat down with a copy of the tractate Brachos. "Until what time may one recite the Shema?" He rocked back and forth over the volume, his legs too short to reach the floor. An old man with a white beard was the first to see the door open again, and the Goyen stepped into the dining room. The room was already dusky. "Are you ready to begin, Eliyahu?" Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel asked. Eliyahu nodded. "Yes, I am." He reviewed the contents of the sugya clearly and gave a talk stating his insights. The Goyen's thoughts were not the clever efforts of a child impressing his elders, but true interpretations of the text. Many years later, the Goyen told a Torah thought to his son-in-law, Rabbi Moshe of Pinsk, and commented that he had thought of it when he was 7 years old. There was a silence after the Goyen finished speaking, broken finally by the man with the sparse beard. "I take back my words," he said to Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel. "There is no one like this child." Hagoyen HaChosid, page 10. The Goyen had a few brothers. The most famous was Rabbi Avram, who later wrote the work Ma'aloi Satayra. The Goyen praised his great piety, and it is told that Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, the Chofetz Chaim, said that Rabbi Avram had wrestled with the angel appointed over money and conquered him, that he had no desire for money. The Goyen's other brothers were Rabbi Yisachar Ber, Rabbi Meir of Yanushak, and Rabbi Moshe, Rabbi of Podzolva, near Vilkomir. Half a year after this episode, the Goyen was riding in a wagon with large wooden wheels. Past the meadows where sheep and cattle grazed, the small figures of peasants stood in the orchards collecting apples in canvas bags. A bay horse pulled slowly at the wagon, and the Jewish driver allowed it occasionally to veer to the side of the road and crop the grass. And as the wagon crept slowly over the dusty road, the Goyen and the man next to him discussed a sugya in the Gemara. A month earlier, this man, Rabbi Avrohom Katznel Boygin, had spoken to the Goyen's father in the crowded base medrash. In the midst of the scholars' melodious chanting, Rabbi Katznel Boygin said, "I have heard great things about your son. I would like to take care of his education." "You are such a great Talmud Chacham. Would you have the time?" Rabbi Katznel Boygin put his hand on the other man's forearm. "I believe that my father in Kedan might be interested in the boy." Here on the wagon, a warm breeze blew across the meadow, carrying with it the scent of fresh mown grass. A songbird stood in the cut hay, wagging its tail and chirping, and it flew 10 yards back as the horse trod along. Clouds sailed across the sky, and large bands of shadow passed over the green and tan strips of farmland. Kedan was a small town. The Gentiles were mostly peasants and small merchants, the Jews, artisans and merchants. In the Beis Medrash, with its worn wooden floor and chipped benches, a handful of scholars learned. Among them was Rabbi Katznel Boygin's father, Rabbi David. Eliyahu was introduced as well to another great Torah leader, Rabbi Moshe, who was writing a commentary on the Jerusalem Talmud entitled Pnei Moshe. It's generally believed that Eliyahu learned with these two outstanding scholars for 3 months. However, some doubt that he learned with Rabbi Moshe. One morning, when a sharp wind blew through the streets and rattled the metal shutters of the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Moshe told Eliyahu, "I have tutored you as best I could. Now the time has come for you to learn on your own. You are free to return to your family." In Vilna, Eliyahu again immersed himself in learning. By the age of 9, he had mastered Tanakh and the Gemara, understanding their most difficult sections with the commentaries of the Rishonim and Achronim, as well as their halachic ramifications. These extraordinary achievements are reported by his sons in their introduction to his commentary on Agoda. And then, his sons report, the Goyen delved into the writings of the Ari. In half a year, he went through the multi-volume body of the Eitz Chaim, a work of almost incomprehensible complexity. Eliyahu learned Gemara with a study partner, Arya Leib, who later became the Goyen's student. Besides this, Eliyahu set aside a few hours each day to learn Kabbalah. In half a year, he went through the entire Zohar with its commentaries. When the Goyen was 11 years old, he set himself the goal of learning the first four orders of the Talmud, Zroim, Moed, Noshim, and Nezikin, with the earlier and later commentators, and with the accompanying works of Halacha. Eliyahu also took upon himself other learning obligations. On the eve of Simchas Torah, he recalled that he had undertaken to learn through Zvachim and Menachos, two of the most difficult tractates in the Gemara, and to complete them by the morning of Simchas Torah. So involved had he been in his study of the four orders of the Talmud that he had completely forgotten about this. Rabbi Michal Datnoy, a great Torah scholar, was staying with the Goyen's family for the holiday. When he awoke at midnight, he saw the glow of a candle and heard the voice of a child murmuring from the other room. Rabbi Michal washed his hands from the copper cup at the side of the bed and slipped over to the door. He stared in amazement at the sight of the boy sitting with his back to him, bent over a thick volume of Gemara. The boy turned a page and, a few minutes later, turned another page. Rabbi Michal came up behind the boy and looked over his shoulder. He had reached page 50 of Zvachim. "Eliyahu!" Rabbi Michal exclaimed. The boy turned around and quickly stood. "I saw you take out this tractate after the evening meal and begin to learn from the first page," Rabbi Michal said. He tapped a finger on the tractate. "And now you are on page 50? Eliyahu said nothing. "I thought that you are a worthy young scholar, but now I have my doubts. How do you come to race through 50 of the most complicated pages in the Gemara?" Again, Eliyahu did not reply. "Now, tell me this," Rabbi Michal said, and he began to ask Eliyahu questions on the most difficult sections of the sugyas that Eliyahu had learned. The Goyin answered each of Rabbi Michal's questions with clarity, until Rabbi Michal exclaimed, "Now I know that you will be a great scholar, for your light already outshines the sun and the moon." Rabbi Michal went back to bed. Early in the morning, when a pale gray light filtered through the bedroom, Rabbi Michal awoke again, and he still heard the murmur of the boy's voice from the other room. Rabbi Datnoy again went to the room. The volume of Zvachim lay on the table closed, and the boy was now more than halfway through another thick volume. Rabbi Michal came up behind the Goyin and looked over his shoulder. "Menachos!" And the boy was more than halfway through. Next to the Goyin were the stumps of a couple of candles that had burned all night. The third candle was still burning, pale and unneeded in the brightening dawn. Rabbi Datnoy's hand came down on Eliyahu's shoulder. "Young man, you do exaggerate. You don't mean to say that you have finished Zevachim and begun Menachos?" Eliyahu looked up at the Talmud Chacham. "I have." Rabbi Michal frowned. "This is too much." He began to shoot questions at the boy on the most difficult sugyas in Menachos, and again, Eliyahu answered them precisely and without hesitation. "Your abilities are staggering," Rabbi Michal at last exclaimed. "May you and your children be blessed with all good and with all knowledge of Torah." Before the morning prayers began, Eliyahu completed the last page of Menachos and entered the great synagogue joyfully. From outside, the synagogue seemed to be merely one of the many houses crowding the courtyard, for Christian regulations prevented it from being higher than any of the other houses. An iron door led to the vestibule, where only a few lofty windows could be seen covered with iron shutters. But the synagogue was built below street level, and when one came down a row of steps, one entered a magnificent synagogue with four massive pillars sweeping up to a cupola, creating a mood of awe and contemplation. The Aron Kodesh was reached by two sets of stairs, one to the right and one to the left, and beneath it, before its base of black stone, stood the place of the Chazan, sunk lower than the rest of the floor. In this imposing stately synagogue, surrounded by men wrapped in white talesim who looked like heavenly beings, the Goyin prayed in joy, celebrating Simchas Torah, the joy of the Torah. A year passed. In the Beis Medrash, on the second floor overlooking the synagogue courtyard, a group of Vilna scholars met every day for half a year to learn the laws of Rambam on calculating the date of the new moon. These laws are complex, and the astronomical calculations difficult to visualize. And so they had hired a craftsman to make a celestial globe on which the movement of the heavenly bodies could be traced. When 12-year-old Eliyahu entered the Beis Medrash one morning, the scholars were sitting at the table before the globe. Eliyahu recalled how 4 years earlier he had spent half an hour a day, when he came home to eat lunch, studying Tichunas HaShemayim by Rabbi Raphael Hanover, one of the handful of science and math books available in Hebrew. Applying his intellect to deduce as much information as he could, he too had constructed a celestial globe in order to understand the laws that govern the movements of the heavens and the halakhic regulations of the calendar. Now Eliyahu listened to the scholars attempting to correlate the information on their globes with what they had learned in the Rambam. Each argued his point and tried to make sense of the information they had, but they were at a standstill. Eliyahu stepped forward. "If I may say a few words," he said, "not for my own honor or to decrease anyone else's honor, for our sages have said, when a person increases his own honor and decreases the honor of heaven, he is despised by others and the honor of heaven is increased." The scholars signaled him to continue. "I myself have made a celestial globe," Eliyahu said, "and I believe that the man who made your globes erred." Eliyahu picked up the globe and showed how the craftsman had miscalculated. When he finished speaking, the scholars nodded in satisfaction. The boy's clever explanation had resolved their difficulties. Eliyahu continued his phenomenal studies. He learned the mystical Sefer Yetzirah in depth. Comparing various versions of the text, he deduced the correct readings. A person who has the right version of the text may, if he is sufficiently pious, attempt to create an artificial man, a golem. One day, Eliyahu began to create such a golem. As he was in the midst of doing so, an image swept over his head. Immediately, Elio stopped his efforts, for, he thought, this is a sign that the powers of heaven are opposed to my continuing because of my young age.